Today is April 27th, 2023. I'm Jen Widener with the Jeffersonville Township Public Library, conducting interviews for Some Like It Hot, Tales from the Firehouse. I'm here today with Captain Jason Wiesenauer of the Jeffersonville Fire Department. Thank you for being here today.
You're welcome.
So everyone has a story to tell, and I wanted to give Jeffersonville firefighters the chance to tell their story, because everyone has a unique perspective on their job. So how long have you been with the department?
16 years.
So what made you want to become a firefighter?
I think, like most firefighters, it goes back to being a kid. I remember in elementary school waving at the fire trucks and the police officers. That was a big deal with my parents, is that you respect and look up to them. And so would always rave to them when they'd visit the school and when they drive through the neighborhood. And it just stuck with me. I went to college to be a police officer. And then through several interviews with the police department after college, I realized kind of the fire department might be more my style.
So if you weren't a firefighter, what do you think you would be doing?
I'd be an electrician.
Okay.
I was halfway through my electrician's apprenticeship when I received the call that I was going to be hired by Jeffersonville. So the electrician's apprenticeship was a 5-year program, and I would have been a union journeyman electrician. And I think we're all pretty happy that I made the switch to being a firefighter, a much safer career.
Well, so to speak.
Yeah.
So what are some challenges of your job?
Being away from family for 24 hours at a time. It's not just me. It seems to be the biggest hurdle for most when you've got young children at home and you're missing sporting events, or you're having to find childcare because your wife also works 24-hour shifts. It can be very tricky, but that's the toughest thing. Most of us come into the job thinking we're going to be working fires all day and motor vehicle accidents and just real heroic stuff. But we end up spending a lot of time in the firehouse with our friends, knowing that at the same time, our families are growing up at home without us, and it's tough. It would almost be easier if we were working all day and getting that sense of fulfillment and making a difference so that it's worth it to be away from the family at that time. So I'd say that seems to be the hardest part of the job, is being away from family. And it's interesting, when one of the reasons I wanted to get hired in a small town fire department like Jeffersonville is I imagined my kids playing baseball and taking the fire truck to watch them play baseball and stuff like that. And it that happens, but not near as much as I had hoped it would happen. Just for all the guys, we've got 92 guys that have families at home and their kids are growing up, and it's such a people are so busy, it's hard to get time for me to meet the other guys' families and have family picnics and stuff like that. And when that happens, when the families get together and the wives can talk about how tough it is to have it's really nice, and it's really wonderful. And it's almost a shame that we seem too busy to see that happen.
So how long does it take to get used to working those 24-hour shifts?
I don't think it takes very long at all, because when most of us try for years to get hired, I tried for 6 years to get hired. I've heard guys try for 11 and 12 years to get hired. There's a lot of excitement when you actually make it on the fire department. It's not like your typical job application. It's something people strive to do and probably have for most of their life. So when you get hired, you want to be there. You're like, and you want that tone to go off, and it's very exciting. So it almost front loads, like that excitement makes it, you're ready to be there 24 hours. And if they call you for overtime, you're ready to be there another 24 hours. And much to our wives' chagrin, they're like, no, we kind of want you home too. But so not only are you excited to be there, but they pay you to do it. It's the best job in town, and we're very fortunate to have
every
it.
Every firefighter I've ever talked to has said it's the best job.
It is. I think a professional baseball player might might entice guys away, but that's about it.
So you work 24 hours on and then 48 hours off? Or?
Our schedule is one of the stranger ones. It's a Kelly shift. So, like, this week I will work Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. And then I get 4 days off.
Okay.
So they're 24-hour shifts, and then you get 24 hours in between those shifts. And after three of them, you get 4 days off.
Okay.
That 4 days is big to kind
of
recover and reset. Yeah. Yeah. So if you take the first day off or the last day off on vacation, you get a really long, you get a week off. It's not just one day off. You actually, that gives you six or seven days.
I mean, honestly,
off.
You guys need that.
If we do. We do. Like, I'm an older firefighter. If I have to work a structure fire at night, then it takes me 2 or 3 days to recover from that. Not just physically, but kind of the mental fog of it. There's a lot that goes into it. It's very difficult. And that time off is very important.
So, I've always wondered, like, okay, when you first start, like, are you laying awake at night waiting to hear that bell go off?
For about 2 months, I didn't sleep. Yeah, no,
anticipation.
And I had my socks on, which is something I never do in bed. It took me about 2 months to kind of actually get some decent sleep. And when the tone goes off, you're racing to the fire truck. I worked Captain Doug Snead. Most of my career I served under him. He taught me to be a firefighter. He taught me most things I know about being a firefighter. And he worked for the fire department, I think, for nearly 40 years.
Oh, wow.
And every time the alarm went off, no matter what time of night, he was the first one on the fire engine. And that's a big deal to think, like, that he could maintain that discipline, because the older we get, we're like, oh, it's another alarm, and we're dragging out. And we're not always the fastest to the fire engine, like a young firefighter.
You kind of lose that excitement after.
Yeah, you would think. But it was his discipline that those seconds make a difference to the person he's going to help.
Absolutely.
He never lost that. And I admire that to this day and aspire to that and hope to teach that as well. Doug Snead made a big difference on my life and a lot of firefighters' life. He was a big, big part of Jeffersonville Fire Department.
Has he retired?
He is retired. Yep. I'm going to try and get you his phone. I'm going to try and get him in here to talk
Absolutely.
To you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So, what is a typical day like? I mean, I know, like, you can't say, like, each call is going to be this or that, but, like, let's say you go in at, what, 7 a.m.?
7 a.m.
What happens from there?
So, I get there at 6:30. So, I do that because if a run comes in at 10 till 7, and then that guy that's on duty may have to be on a structure fire for another hour or two while his kids are waiting for him to take him to school or while... You know, there's something going on. So we try to get there early to relieve our buddies. We don't get paid to show up early, but I have a professional duty, and I think showing up early is part of that professional duty, and I have a personal responsibility to my friend who I'm relieving to get him home to his family if I can. So I get there at 6:30, make sure there's coffee made. That's a big part of
the important thing.
Yes, that's a big part of the first couple hours at the fire department. Then put my gear on the truck, meet with the person I'm relieving. That would be the captain from the day before. And we'll talk about anything important that happened. Or I made a run to this house and there's 6 children in this house. And keep in mind that there's a run to that house. So we pass along any important information. Then there's going to be a good half hour, 45 minutes of catching up with our friends that worked the day before. With the guys that are coming in, we start to do truck check. We make sure every piece of equipment on the truck is ready for the day and working. And then one guy is starting breakfast, and the other guys start thinking about chores around the firehouse. We have a list of chores.
So you guys don't just sit around between calls. I think that's
no.
A misconception.
Yes. That maybe comes later in the day when there's some sitting around, but the first several hours of the firehouse are spoken for. We're going to get breakfast. We're going to get the house in shape and ready and clean, and so that we can then begin our day. At about 9:30, I do training every day at the firehouse. The training's going to last at least an hour. I have a training calendar that's an annual training calendar so that we're checking off all the appropriate boxes so that every firefighter on my crew is in on plan A for whatever emergency might come up, and that we are prepared to do the minimum professional standards.
And how many firefighters do you oversee?
So currently I see, I have five guys in my house, and typically four of them will be there every day. One of them transfers out to cover for sick people or whatever.
And you're up at station four now?
I moved to station four a month ago. It's closer to my home. It's a newer station. It's really nice, and it's a huge district. I've got a lot to learn to kind of catch up, because it's much different than District 1, where I spent most of my career.
Because you were downtown before.
I was downtown. I've been downtown for most of my career. I've worked at every firehouse for at least 6 to 8 months, but downtown is kind of where I keep finding my way back to. It was always the most challenging district. They make the most runs. They've got the river, the hospital, the interstate,
the library,
which is always a pain in the side.
he says that jokingly.
But yeah, so I'm at District 4 now, and I mean, we cover areas in Charlestown State Park. It's crazy how big our district is. We could be at the boat ramp at Charlestown State Park. And then we could be in a brand new neighborhood with lightweight construction.
Because that's
homes.
Like all of the stuff that was recently annexed.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a very big area, and we need more firehouses out there. Probably two more, but we're hoping to get one more in River Ridge.
Yeah, I had that, heard talk of at least one more up that way.
We have been fighting to get a firehouse in River Ridge. And there's you know, budget, economy. We had COVID.
River Ridge has a bunch of money. They should help you out.
That's right. And that gets into state politics.
Right.
With
But I always wonder, as I pass by like Amazon and all those giant buildings, like, yeah, I'm sure they have a sprinkler system.
They do.
But it can only do so much.
That's right. The sprinkler systems could be overwhelmed in a hurry. You've got tons of flammable material in there. And there's only so much a sprinkler system can do in a big box like that. So it's intimidating, but it's also kind of exciting. It's a brand new challenge. And River Ridge has offered to donate land for a fire department, but the fire department's big expense is salaries.
Oh, absolutely. Because you'd have to get what, probably?
I think it's about $100,000 a year per firefighter. It's something like that. I'm not a numbers guy.
And how many firefighters would you need to staff?
We would need at least three. That's per shift, so at least nine total for the fire department. And then I think the land they want to give us is not in the ideal location. There's a lot that goes into it. I'm understanding of every party. It is an expensive thing, but it's an insurance policy.
Well, and the citizens need to know that they're safe that live up that way. Those workers need to know that they're safe. If something happens, you got their back. I mean,
we're going to do our best, but we could sure use some help.
But I had no idea you guys went all the way up to Charlestown State Park, because I'm there often.
Yeah, there are certain parts of the park. It's not the entire park that's our coverage, but it's the boat ramp, as I understand it, and then just certain districts that are actually closed off to the public. They've got gates and fences around them, but that doesn't mean someone's not going to get in there and maybe could get hurt.
Yeah.
Or a wildland fire could happen.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So I learned something new today. Charlestown State Park is protected. So what are some of the best and worst parts of your job?
The best part, I would say, is the people that I get to work with. They're pretty incredible. We all seem to be on the same page. That doesn't mean we all get along. But when push comes to shove, we love each other. You hear a lot of brother and sister and family.
And just like the real biological family, you're going to have your issues. I mean,
that's just
part of being human.
Yeah, and that can be difficult, but that's easily overcome, the tough days when we have little arguments, because we do care about each other. So I'd say the best part is the family and the appreciation that we get. People will thank us. And people have bought us breakfast when we're out, and it's difficult for us, because we see ourselves, we are getting paid to do a job that we love, we feel very fortunate. It's almost like we're kind of embarrassed when people thank us for doing it, because we're very fortunate to get to do it.
But I think we truly are thankful.
Yes,
that
no,
we
and
have
and
such an incredible fire department.
The fire department in America is really has an abundance of appreciation that we are thankful for, and we're very proud. And I think most of us, if not all of us, strive to live up to that expectation. There's a bit of a burden, not a burden. There's a bit of a responsibility to that, and we all hold that in kind of the front of our mind, that we are always representing the fire department. So we try very hard to do that, but it still kind of embarrassed isn't the word. It's uncomfortable sometimes when people thank us for our service.
Because you're like, it's just my job.
Yeah, I'm doing my job. And I not just that, but I feel very fortunate
yeah.
to get to do it.
You really
I should
enjoy
be
it.
Thanking the city for paying me to get to do this. So it's interesting, but it's wonderful. Like, people will bake us cookies at Christmas. It's wonderful. Like, it really is. It's a joy. We're very thankful. And we try to give back.
You all are big into the crusade for children.
Sure. I'm a Christmas guy. I love Christmas. And so I feel it's important to decorate the firehouse for Christmas. A lot of these grumpy old guys have to decorate their homes. They don't want to come in and decorate the firehouse. They're like, leave me alone, wheezing out.
Stop but, with the Christmas.
But it's incredible. Like, kids will drive by and see that firehouse lit up. It means something.
Yeah.
And it means that is our home for a third of the year, and I treat it that way, and I like my home decorated for Christmas. We do. We'll put up a Christmas tree. It's not always the best. The ornaments aren't always the best, because, like I said, it's a bunch of grumpy old dudes that, you know. But it's meaningful. It's important.
It's just like any other family. You're going to have the grumpy
yeah.
people. They're like, well, I don't want to do this. But then in the end, like, I'm that
they
way,
love
too.
It.
Every Christmas, I'm like, I don't want to do this. But then I do, and I'm like, oh, it is nice to sit and look at those lights.
Yeah.
It's calm, and it's peaceful.
Kind of a side story, like, I'm not the only one that does this, but there's times at night when the firehouse is quiet and the lights are out, I'll walk around in the bay and look at these fire trucks and be like, it's incredible that I get to do this for a living. And it's the same with the Christmas tree. Like, when a guy walks through there and the Christmas tree's lit up, we like it. It's
yeah.
nice. I think
yeah.
so.
So, because, I mean, you guys do have to work holidays.
We do.
Like, the fire
yes.
department doesn't close for Christmas or Thanksgiving or 4th of July. So, I mean, people need to remember that. Like, you guys are there 24/7,
365.
Like, somebody's
yep.
there.
Yep. And it seems like there's always a few guys that no matter what, they get stuck working every Christmas. I don't know how it works, but, you know, their shift will get Christmas, or when the other shift gets it, he gets transferred to that shift somehow. It's crazy, but a good friend of mine has worked most Christmases for his career, and that'd be about 12 years for him. And he's got 3 kids at home. Mm-hmm. And they've just gotten used to doing Christmas on Christmas Eve or the day after. They get used to it, and they love it and support it. But, you know, it is disruptive. That's part of our life, is that we are away from our family for some of those times. So I think that's the best part, is that we have each other. And the worst part, man, we see some awful stuff. And then we take that home to our family. I can be pretty grouchy sometimes. My wife's a saint for dealing with me. And she knows, like, okay, he needs to go take a nap. That's tough. You never know what's going to bother you. And then sometimes it's just because you didn't sleep at night. And then you come home and you still have to do the chores or get the kids here. Or for me, there's horses.
I was going
to
say, for you,
yeah,
you have horses to
for,
take care of.
A fence that needs rebuilt because a horse has torn it down and I haven't slept all night.
Or you're chasing miniature horses down the street.
Yeah, that has happened many times. One of JPD's favorite calls is that there are horses loose on Charlestown Pike, and the guys love it. And, you know, my wife will come out and help at 3 a.m. to get these horses back, and she's apologizing to the police, and they're like, this is the best run I've made all my career.
Yes.
You know, just chasing miniature horses. So I have been called at the firehouse on the red phone by dispatch saying, Jason, there's horses loose. Can you wake your wife up?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's happened. So everyone knows I'm the horse firefighter, I guess.
Well, I interviewed Jason's wife last week, and those horses are pretty darn cute.
They're incredible.
And I mean, those little ones I could see would be stinkers.
Absolutely.
So is there one call that stands out to you more than all the others?
There are several, but I kind of anticipated this question. There is. It's referred to as the Howard Avenue fire. There's some apartments on Howard Avenue. This particular one had a fatality. The guy died later in the hospital. But it stands out to me for a couple reasons. One, personally, I had to call a mayday at the fire. I was a younger sergeant, and my officer was unconscious. I didn't realize it. Another crew came in to assist us fighting the fire inside and hollered at me that my officer was down. We came back, and he was unresponsive. In my mind, he had had a heart attack. That's not what happened, thank goodness. But I thought he was dying right there. And so I have to compose myself enough to speak clearly on the radio to get him the help he needs when I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. So it was very difficult, and that affected me in more ways than one. Professionally, it affected me just because of the danger of it, and this is a guy I care a lot about that could be in life-threatening
danger.
This
is your family.
Yes, yeah. And it's very difficult to hear each other on the radio, so you need to speak very clearly. I was fortunate that I practiced my mayday calls regularly because there's a certain order you're supposed to do it in to get it. You want it to be muscle memory because I was not thinking clearly at the time. In my recall of the event, I remember him not even wearing a mask or helmet. And that's not, he was wearing his mask and helmet, but because I care so much about him and I was in fear for his life, like I was picturing him as I see him every day. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And I remember there was tunnel vision. In speaking about the event later, I could not describe what was going on around me because I was hyper-focused on what was in front of me. So there a ton of adrenaline. There were chemical reasons why everything happened that way. But we were able to get him out, move him out, and what happened is he was knocked unconscious by falling debris. And we determined that later. Everybody's response was fantastic. EMS, police. He was police escorted to U of L Hospital. He was actually conscious in the ambulance, so we knew he was going to be okay.
But still, it's scary.
Very scary. But at that fire, there were many more reasons why this fire stands out. That fire changed the way Jeffersonville Fire Department fights fires. Because of flow path of heat, there was trouble communicating where the fire was because we had several different people saying it was on the first floor, but it was actually in a subfloor. But so communication was difficult, and then there was a window that was open to rescue people, and that's where the heat and fire went, and it had a great flow path that actually trapped firefighters. And so they had to evacuate the building. And we had difficulty ventilating the building. So many, many different things happened at this one particular fire that kind of skyrocketed us into the new century of firefighting. So a very interesting fire, and we still talk about it to this day. I have the audio of the fire, and I'll still listen to it sometimes. It was just an incredible fire in my career, and I think a few other people feel the same way. My current lieutenant was also on that fire, and he was caught in the flow path. So that fire stands out to him as well.
And that
we'll still discuss
that
it.
That changes you when you're
it does.
Caught. When you're so highly trained, and
yeah.
then something happens
something
and you're
unexpected.
Stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a situation, so we were responding to multiple rescues in this building. And so when there are rescues, that's why we're here. Like today, like I'm thinking, if there's a rescue, that's why we're firefighters. Ultimately, it's so that the whole city doesn't burn down.
Right.
Ultimately, that's why we have a fire department. Specifically, it's to keep certain buildings from burning down. And more importantly, is life. That's the one. We are here to save a life. And we will go to extraordinary extremes to do that. So we had calls of multiple rescues, people trapped in certain apartments, and we were trying to make our way to those apartments when there was a flashover underneath us, so the temperature immediately skyrocketed. We had to evacuate for our own safety, but we still believed there were people in there. So that's why we went back in on the lower floor where the debris was falling and actually ended up knocking one of us unconscious. And it was intimidating. It was tough. So there was fear. There was extraordinary circumstances that I'd never experienced before. It was a big time fire in a small town fire department.
You can't train for every single
scenario.
Because, I mean, there's just...
Right.
This is the real world.
That's right.
Like, anything can happen.
We as a department, certain firefighters understood the science of it. The very smart people that I work with, very experienced firefighters, were on that scene. There was one door that was open to the apartment where people were being rescued. That door remained open, which caused most of the problems in this fire. Had that door been shut, it would have protected, it would have changed the flow path and cut off some of that ventilation and protected the building as a whole. And we know that now. And we didn't know that as a practice at the time, that when you open a door, you shut the door, and that confines the fire to certain areas. So it's not a condemnation of our department before that fire. We were very skilled, very experienced firefighters. But the science behind it, we're learning things so rapidly in today's world.
Oh, absolutely.
And now as an entire department, that has become a practice, is shutting those doors and controlling that flow path. So that's why I think that fire in particular was such a huge one person did die. It was a man who lived in the apartment where the fire started. He was alive when we responded. He was on the front porch speaking to people, but he had inhaled and burned so much of his respiratory system mm-hmm. that he didn't make it. And there have certainly been fires that have been more deadly that day in Jeffersonville, which is terrible. And those fires stand out to people. But because so many changes happened at the Howard after the Howard Avenue fire, that's the one that stands out to me. I certainly have a lot of other calls that are terrible or funny or stand out, but that one was the big one for me in my career, I think.
So for those people that don't know, where is Howard Avenue in Jeffersonville?
It's in District 1 off of, between 8th and 8th Street and 10th Street is kind of the Howard Avenue's big, where there are several apartments.
Okay, is it like across from the cemetery?
Yes, near French and Pratt. And I was coming from Station 5, which is out on Allison Lane. Mm-hmm. And I came with a 3-man crew on my engine, and I was driving. So as they were trying to rescue people, I was throwing my pack on in a hurry, which you don't want to do. You want to stay calm and steady. So it was very easy for us all to get our heart rates up and the adrenaline flowing because we were rushing. The fire had a little bit of a jump on us. And the fire at Howard Avenue continued to get worse as we were on scene, and that's not supposed to happen. It should get better, but everybody was focusing on rescue, and that's another thing that has changed in our department, is truck companies focus on rescue, and then the initial engine company works very hard to put that fire out. So before that, it had always been, if there's a rescue, everything goes to that rescue. I'm overgeneralizing it. But that was basically the thought process. If you see someone in a window, that's what you do.
Your first instinct to save it.
That's right. Sure. But now we know we have certain people that are going to save those people. But if you put the fire out, you save everyone in the building. So there's, and again, that's an overgeneralization, but that's our plan A, is that the initial attack engine goes to the fire while the truck company or a reserve engine or a later coming engine can help assist with rescues.
So tell us the difference between an engine and a truck.
Sure. The truck, our trucks have aerial ladders on them.
Okay.
They're very easy to see. Engine carries hose and water and fights the fire. The truck companies carry personnel, men, and tools, and they bust doors in, they tear ceilings and walls down, they search the building for victims that have gone unconscious or are hiding or are locked in a room, and they do rescues. The engines you think of are taking a hose and water to a fire and putting that fire out. Now, in a smaller town department like our, we have 92 firefighters, everyone can do everything. So I'm currently an engine captain. Last year I was a truck captain. I can do, maybe not as well as some of these firefighters, I can do any job in the department. I have done all the jobs in
the department. You can drive all the trucks.
I can drive the trucks. I enjoy driving the trucks. The sergeant's job is driving the trucks, and it's a really wonderful job, and it's difficult because you have to get them to the fire safely, and there's an amazing amount of injuries and fatalities to firefighters happen en route to fires in wrecks. So the sergeant's job is very difficult, but people love that job. You know, driving, you're pumping the water. A lot revolves around you doing your job correctly. And I tell you, it's one of the better jobs because you're avoiding some of that, the cancer and the carcinogens of being in a fire. So as far as health goes, the sergeant's job is a pretty enviable job.
So what does the captain do?
The captain is in, so the first captain on scene is in charge of that scene until a battalion chief shows up, until a command vehicle shows up. So you're technically, for several minutes, you are guiding
everything that's happening,
but you are also participating in it. It's tricky for a few minutes. So as a captain, job number one is protecting the firefighter behind you. He's going to be a lot less experienced, have a lot fewer years on than you, and he's looking for you to you for guidance. So you're going to take him in on a hand line to the fire as an engine captain. So you'll be behind him. He's doing a lot of the muscle work. He's carrying a charged hand line in, which can be very difficult. And you're coming in behind him. You're hauling hose in behind him. You're looking at the situation to protect him during a fire. And all that firefighter is focused on is finding the fire and putting water on that fire. While you are checking the temperature of the fire, you're looking for victims around you, you're seeing through the smoke, because you usually can't see anything at all.
Right.
And you have a thermal, the captain will have a thermal imager to check the temperature and conditions as you're progressing towards a fire. So that's what an engine captain would do on a fire. What an what a truck captain would do is participate in the primary search. So you're inside going to the fire, looking for victims at the fire, and then falling back through living spaces like bedrooms and living rooms, kitchens, to find possible victims of carbon monoxide inhalation or the heat can be overwhelming, and you want to get those out.
So these fires, they most burn pretty hot, right?
Very hot, up to 1200 degrees, I believe, until we can get it ventilated. And then that's on a thermal layer, so at the ceiling, you're going to find those higher temperatures, and then down at the ground, you can find anywhere to 200 to 600. In flashover conditions or in full burn conditions, the entire space can be skyrocketing in heat. Our gear protects us to extreme temperatures for a wonderful amount of time, but you don't want to spend too – you can't – people can't survive in
those
situations.
No, even with the best gear, there's no way.
Yeah, that's right. So, very hot. Carbon monoxide, I believe, is what gets most people at first, is the smoke. That's why we say sleep with your bedroom door shut. Because a bedroom with a child in it can survive for a long period of time at very survivable conditions in a fire as long as that door is shut. So, that's big time in protecting yourself from a residential structure fire.
So, can you tell us about a humorous call? Without, you know, like, disclosing too much, you know, details.
Yeah, so most of the terrible calls end up being humorous. The gallows humor, it's a part of our protecting our mental health. In a very private firehouse condition, I'm not going to deny, we laugh at some awful things, and it's to protect
us. It's how most of us cope with stuff.
Yeah, there's no disrespect intended, but humanity can be terrible, it can be funny, it can be wonderful, and we deal with all of that. I'm trying to think of some humorous calls without being...
Like, do you get, like, maybe some little old ladies who call you all for everything because they just like firefighters?
Okay. And yeah, so I didn't go on this call, but it happened while I was on duty. A lady called my lieutenant to come. Her oven was malfunctioning, and it was at 420 degrees, and the temperature kept going up. And my lieutenant and his engine company showed up, and they were looking at the oven, and it wasn't hot. And as they were there, it went up to 421 degrees, and then 422 degrees. And I think you can see where this is going.
Yes, yes.
And they told the lady that her clock was functioning appropriately, and it was currently 422 in the afternoon. And that happened, and it's... She was embarrassed. Of course she was embarrassed. But everyone had a great laugh about it.
Well, I mean, better safe than sorry. Because what if it was what if it was a gas stove and
absolutely.
It was malfunctioning?
Yeah,
I mean,
no, that's... But you're absolutely
those
right.
Those are the calls where you're like, okay, it was funny. Everybody's safe.
It was hilarious as it dawned on everyone. And they're like, how are we going to explain this?
Because you want to be respectful,
yeah,
obviously.
And we're so fortunate, especially with sweet little old ladies. They think we're all... their sons and
absolutely.
Daughters.
Yes.
So, you know, she got an arm around her, and they're like, ma'am, it's your clock. And it's going to be great. And she was so embarrassed, and we thanked her for letting us come.
All right.
It was,
I mean, you got to get
everyone
out of the firehouse.
Everyone had a good laugh.
And,
yeah.
So do you all still get calls for, my cat's in the tree?
We do. And that's it's kind of a controversial subject in the fire department. I will respond always to a cat in the tree. I'll set the ladders up. I'll get the cat down. There are certain officers that will not do that because the cats come down. They do. But I think it's a wonderful training. Everyone in the neighborhood comes out to see the fire truck up there. We get to chat with the neighbors and have a great laugh. I can send my young firefighter up the
absolutely.
Ladder.
Absolutely.
Perfectly safe for us to climb a ladder. That's what we do. We do it in training all the
That's
time.
That's what you're trained to do.
So it's a if nothing else, it's just a great public relations tool.
Yeah, it's a community building thing.
I will say, there are firefighters, you know, Captain Josh Kemp responded, I believe, to a bird in a tree. It happened. My bird is stuck in the tree. It was a house bird that had gotten out, and they responded. They didn't get the bird.
I mean,
she flew away.
It's a bird.
Right?
Oh. I mean, but I could see people panic.
Yeah. The standard... You don't see many cat skeletons in a tree, do you?
That's what I've heard,
yeah.
Like, you don't see any cat skeletons in a tree.
But I think I love to get out. I love to set the truck up. I think it's really cool, and so do the kids. And if you bring that cat down, it's a wonderful feeling.
Well, right.
I will say, I responded to Henryville after the tornado.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And there was a veteran who came up to us, younger than I was, veteran. And he said, my house was destroyed. We were standing right where his house had been. He said, all I have left is that cat in that tree right there. It was his kitten. It was a tree that had no leaves, no limbs.
Oh,
it was just sitting up there.
Gosh.
And I was like,
we're getting your cat
down. And I'm trying not to cry right
I mean,
now thinking
right.
about it. This tough young veteran asked us. And
I lost everything.
I'll do everything to
get
that cat down.
Mm-hmm.
And my good friend, Captain Mike Terry, He climbed up there and brought that cat. He's a Marine himself.
I mean, that's the things that you do,
it's,
though.
That was very human and wonderful and a great
experience.
I mean,
gotta climb up that tree somehow, some
yeah.
way. But yeah, I
so
mean.
So that's what I would say. Get the cat out of the tree. Yeah, it means a lot.
Well, I mean, I know you guys hate to hear this, but, you know, we get to see our tax money at work. You know,
right.
We get to see those trucks. People don't realize they can come to the fire station and ask.
Yeah.
Especially at headquarters. They
That's
love
right.
to give tours.
Oh, yeah.
I have a super old fire truck there.
We're
I mean,
very proud of our fire equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it when I got my tour.
Nice.
It was awesome. I got to ask questions, and yeah, it was fun. So what are some misconceptions about firefighting? There's countless TV shows, and I know I sit there and watch them and roll my eyes going, I don't think that really happens. That definitely doesn't happen.
I would say probably people may underestimate the heat of a fire. It's otherworldly, and when there's a fire, you won't see this on TV, you can't see anything. You can't see your hand in front of your face. It is blacked out conditions. You never see smoke on the fires that you see in the movies. Backdraft or ladder. It's smoke is what is there, and it makes it very difficult to do your job. So those scientifically, that's the big misconception that you see on TV. And then the other thing that you see on TV is the drama. There's very little drama in the firehouse from day to day, other than who ate my ham sandwich that I brought in for lunch.
Right.
That's the drama you're going to see at a firehouse. I would say those are the easy ones to point out. And then we have just as many problems as everyone else. We have, in our fire department, we have people who struggle with substance abuse. We have people who struggle with mental health or physical challenges, or they struggle in their married life at home, and we deal with that just the same way that anyone else may deal with it.
At the end of the day, you all are humans.
We are humans, yeah.
You just run into fires. I know you don't just run into fires, but you know what I'm saying?
But you find that we're all the same type of person that doesn't see that as a problem at all. It astounds my wife that we would do that, but it's nothing. I don't think that's a big deal. I don't want to say it's nothing. That doesn't seem to be as big a deal. Like, that's who is drawn to the fire department.
Adrenaline junkies a little bit.
That probably an overgeneralization, but yeah, we certainly have our fair share of adrenaline junkies. But we've got just as many the most exciting thing they want to do is get on their lawnmower and they're riding lawnmower at home. I think it's fair to say you're going to find more guys that would go skydiving in our profession than another, maybe, but that's not who we are. We're not all nitro circus adrenaline junkie type people. We are very average in most ways. You're going to find the whole spectrum of type of people, open-minded, closed-minded, fast drivers, slow drivers. I drive like an old fogey.
Because you have to speed when you're in a fire truck. So,
well, that may be another thing. We don't go over the speed limit in most circumstances. But because traffic moves out of our way, we are able to get places faster.
Yeah, that's an important reminder, people who are listening to this. Please, please, please move over for emergency vehicles.
Move to the right.
Yeah, just move over. Let them get to where they're going, because what if it's your loved one they're trying to get to?
But we have to stop at stop signs. We have to slow down dramatically at intersections, because we cannot get in a wreck. Because our vehicles weigh over 60,000 pounds, and they don't stop on a dime. And they do tremendous damage. And if we get in a wreck, then we can't get to the emergency
right.
We're trying to get to.
Right.
So a sergeant, his most important job is getting us there safely. So we are not quite as able as the police department to respond quickly.
As quickly, yes. Yeah. I've been in a police car speeding down 10th Street, and yeah, it's crazy.
We shoot to get to every emergency in 7 minutes.
Okay.
In District 4, where I work, that's physically not possible.
I was going to say, if you have to go all the way
so
up
large.
To Charlestown State Park, to the boat right. ramp, I know where that firehouse is.
Yeah.
That's quite a ways.
Even some of our further neighborhoods, we just can't get there that quickly, because the roads are still too small for our big fire trucks to get through.
Fire trucks are getting bigger, roads are getting smaller,
that's right,
it seems like. So.
Yeah.
So I try to do a little research about whoever I'm going to interview, just because I like to know what I'm walking into. And I saw that you participated in the World Police and Fire Games. What was that like?
It was incredible. I got to go with my good friend Josh Stith. He's a lieutenant here at the fire department. And he's an incredible wrestler and grappler, mixed martial artist. And we bonded early on in the fire service because our beliefs in physical fitness and professionalism are kind of in tune. And we saw the World Police and Fire Games as a great opportunity to represent Jeffersonville to the world. Josh is an incredible athlete, and he's full bore ahead and very proud to be a Jeffersonville firefighter, as I am. And we found it important to work very hard at our events so that our city could be represented appropriately. And so the World Police and Fire Games was a fantastic experience. We went to New York City, and he sacrificed a lot because his daughter had just been born. He had a brand new baby at home.
Oh, wow.
And yet we're going to New York City to represent Jeffersonville. While I was there, I was going to compete in the triathlon, which I'd never done before, but I thought it would be a great experience. And a hurricane came in.
Oh, gosh.
And my event was canceled. I had trained for 2 years to get there.
Oh,
and they canceled my event. So I immediately switched into, I'm now Josh's corner man, and I'm going to get him wrestling at peak condition. And Josh did a fantastic job, and we had a great experience. And Josh won a gold medal there.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It was incredible. And so we had been to a couple more games since then, and we tried to bring people with us, and it was always a wonderful experience. And I think Josh has competed at three World Games and one Canadian-American Games, and always does very well. He's a great guy.
He's representing us.
Yes,
no.
He is. And he means it. When he says he's representing his city, he is. That's big to him because he went to high school here. He grew up here.
Okay.
Jeffersonville is his city, and he carries that as a burden to he can't stop because he believes people believe in him, and they do.
But we need that. We need people like that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I know a lot of firefighters have jobs besides firefighting. Do you have another job?
I do. I cut stuff up with my chainsaws.
Oh, nice.
I cut trees and do small landscaping jobs and brush cutting. I mowed grass with another firefighter for years, and then that got to be too much with my summer. My summer was all spent on a lawnmower, and we already spent enough time away from our families. So I found a job that I could do smaller 2 or 3 hour jobs and be finished with them, and then I get to be at the farm for the rest of the time. So I kind of designed that on purpose so that I can wrap my side work up in just a couple hours a week.
Yeah.
Our career on the fire department we have very good salaries. We can live very well in town. And so most of us don't need a second job, but the type of people that are drawn to the fire department, I think, are also drawn to staying busy.
You're not just going to sit around on your, right.
I think that does ring true, is that most of us are finding something to do as side work just to stay busy, if nothing else.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I know in October you have another little job that you do around the farm, right? You portray a certain a certain horror villain. Is that
so,
right?
So yeah, that's every October, me and the guys at the firehouse, we bring out the old horror movies. Like it's
of course.
So that 10 days that we work in October are spent watching. My favorite is Halloween, Friday the 13th, and we're always on the lookout for new horror movies to watch in October. But I for the longest time, I wanted to buy the Michael Myers costume, and I have. And I believe Michael Myers will be coming to the library this October.
I think he might be,
he's developed an interest in the local. Yeah. So, yeah, Michael Myers wandered around the farm, and my poor wife, who is a little jumpy to begin with, now she's got Michael Myers chasing her around the farm.
She did a great job taking pictures of Jason this past October, and that's kind of how I got interested in meeting these crazy people, because I was like, oh, that's really funny. And then one day, Jason just happened to come to the library, and I'm like, hey, wait.
Oh, my gosh.
Wait, you're Michael Myers.
Yeah, you got me.
Yes. So, firefighters do have a sense of humor.
Oh, my gosh. The practical jokes you see around the
firehouse. I think you kind of have to with a lot of work here, and you have to, yep. So what advice would you give anyone that wants to become a firefighter?
I think Step one is to meet a local firefighter or just go talk with a local firefighter and try and make that personal connection to someone that can guide you. Physical fitness is huge. It's very taxing to fight a fire. It's very taxing to stay alert and interested for a 20 or 30 year career. As I'm approaching 50, it's much harder for me to keep up with a 22-year-old firefighter who's excited to be fighting a fire. Physical fitness is huge, and that's you don't need to be a muscle-bound monster. What I would request from any new firefighter is that they are dedicated to a regular fitness regime, whether it's yoga, bicycling, running, walking, weightlifting. It's something that's going to keep you healthy over a 20 or 30 year career.
Absolutely.
Healthy and able to carry 60 to 100 extra pounds while fighting a fire. So that's big. I would say definitely discuss it with family, because there's going to be a third of your life now spent with a whole different family.
Yep.
And then typically a firefighter will bear the weight of some of the things they see. So I would ask that you are mentally, emotionally, and spiritually fit, and prepared to see some of the worst in life, some of the best in life, and then the truth of humanity over an extended period of time. Because you get very in touch with your city, whether that's homelessness, mental health issues.
Addiction,
low income, high income. You're going to be very in tune to the pulse of the city you work in. So it's a big ask. It's not all fun and games and riding around in a big, red, wonderful fire engine. So that's what I would say. That's what I would recommend to someone who wants to be a firefighter, is begin talking to some firefighters.
Is there anything else you want to tell us?
Nothing comes to mind. I appreciate you taking the time. This is really wonderful.
No, thank you. I've gotten to ask some questions that I've wanted to know about firefighting. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.